Welcome to the BFM Historical Society. This week, we talk to Greg Wood and Scott Kelly, both of whom got their start writing ads for free, and both of whom were involved in the radio travesty that was the Friday Night Allen. Greg and Scott remember some of the more light-hearted moments in BFM's history. Welcome to the Historical Society, Greg Wood and Scott Kelly.
Hello, pleased to be here. How are you?
Hello.
Is this technically a threesome?
Two-way threesome.
Who's the girl?
Scott, your first involvement with BFM, when was that and how did it come about?
Greg here.
Hello.
Hello. He had a flat which I used to go to and hang out with quite a lot.
And stay there all the
time. And
for free.
Well, you came down around to my place for roast all the time.
You were living at your mum's.
Yeah, shut up. And he was working one night. I was working on my history essay and Greg was working on filling in. He had a page of 50 boxes on them and he was drawing little ideas for the zoo. And I said, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm doing advertising. What's that? That sounds kind of fun. Better than history anyway. So that's where I first heard about advertising. And then Greg went up to write ads here.
Well, yeah, I've been listening to B in my bedroom papatoto since 1983 or something, and just loving the ads, listening to the ads the whole way through and sticking with them and loving that culture. And I'd always wanted to write the ads up here, but I had no idea how to do it. And so at the same time as I ended up at ad school for my sins, I was actually driving a pizza delivery car for Dial at Dino's.
Where was ad school? Oh, what's advertising school?
You actually go to ad school to learn how to do ads. That's why they all come out the same.
Teaches you how to be creative. So you that's entirely possible.
You were at ad school, and what yep. year was this?
Oh, look, this is 91, 92, 93, that sort mm-hmm. of time. And I was driving a pizza delivery car to pay the rent, and I actually delivered a pizza to Jeff Devereaux, station manager at the time, and saw all this BFM paraphernalia in his house and sort of promptly dropped the pizza. Asked him if I could come up and sort of have a look around. He said, yeah, come up and have a chat with Bob, who's the creative director. So I turned up and I walked in and I sort of, like some kind of giggling school, go, oh, Bob, you're my idol.
What?
And the first thing I said at BFM.
How embarrassing.
I know, shocking.
So you asked to write some ads.
I asked to write some ads, yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, came up. Yep, absolutely.
Off you go. Yeah. Because it was kind of free-for-all, and they didn't have to run anything that anyone wrote.
Yeah.
I must have made some kind of impression, so he got me to write another one and another one. But I think I had soaked up, I mean, years of listening to everything from Goon Show to, you know, to whatever else.
That was out loud, Greg.
Yeah.
Nick's going to say the Python word, aren't you?
Is this thing on?
Unfortunately, it is, and people are listening. It's the morning.
Of course, knowing Bob Kerrigan, he would have taken advantage of this situation because he could have got you to write the ads that he was supposed to write, and of course, you weren't getting paid.
And he'd just sit in the corner practicing Soundgarden riffs, you know. And so I did. So for weeks, months, I did that for free until I actually got a job on Wednesday mornings from 9 till 12, writing the ads for I think $2.97 an hour or something. And when I finally did leave to start up my own ad agency, I got a free clock from Harriet Crompton.
I came out for an entire year and didn't get paid. And they found out and go, oh, we can put you on something called Task Force Green.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. So the government pays you, who pays me?
Yeah.
Perfect.
It was nice that Harriet gave you a clock.
It was great. And it worked for years.
So anyway, and he said, oh, I'm up at BFM. They've given me a graveyard show. It's like, oh, dude, I want to come along, please.
Yeah,
we could do some funny things. It'll be fun. Me.
Yeah.
So we did. It was, I don't know, when's the graveyard? Midnight till bloomin' six or seven, eh?
Yeah.
So it's like you're stuck there at 3 a.m. with nothing to do and you just have to start doing stupid shit.
Yeah.
So we kind of recorded that, a couple of graveyard shows. I think we only did two. And then Bill, who was program director at the time, said, hey, I want to give you guys a show. And I want it to be on Friday night from 10 till 2. And it's like, we're going, holy shit, what? What?
The magic spot of pure hell and genius. It was just terrific.
Yeah, we did that. That was like, they said, oh, you need a name for your show because we want to put it on the program guide. And they said, what should we call it? And I think Greg said, Alan?
Alan?
Let's call it Alan.
That's a name, really. Yeah, so, it's just really grown up, you know. So
yeah, really mature. It became Friday Night Alan, 10 till 12. First show.
I did 10 till 2.
10 till 2,
I found that a hell of a lot harder than the graveyard on a Friday night because you're really cranking it, you know?
Totally, eh? Yeah. Then, you know, a couple of years later, Bill cut it down to 10 to 12, which, thank Christ, that was, what? I think it was August 94, and we went through till 2000 or 2001.
Yeah, long time.
Maybe 2002, I can't remember.
I think I left it in 96 or 97, because, hang on, 95, we did summer of 95, then I started the agency with the other guys and stopped writing here, but kept doing the show. Every Friday night for years and years and years was ruined by the Friday Night Ellen, you know?
Yeah, no Friday night for pushing 8 years, God. It was not, I remember the first Friday night at home I had, it was like, oh my God, what do I, can I go to Squid yet? CC Rider, that was actually the Elvis Live from Aloha concert, except the night before when they played to the fans. Just a bit of trivia for you there. Uh-huh. All you Elvis nerds out there.
I didn't know that.
We're usually drunk and yelling something over the top of it. And then it would be like, oh, what do we do now? Quick.
Quick.
We always start the show with the Pixies.
Yeah. I'll start with you, Greg. You were writing ads with Bob for a while.
Well, actually, I'd left ad school by that stage and was quote-unquote freelancing, which means driving pizza cars, working in a bike shop and you name it, being a stagehand, being a barman, all the things that actually give you those stories that you can put into ads. We were talking with Scott before about how almost every ad would be a situation that you'd actually experienced in life, but not always to that extent. I think it was almost like a not quite community service, but something that you wanted to do for...
free.
Free.
The occasional CD. Oh, thanks, I got OK Computer.
Yeah, or the chance to actually stand on the field at Big Day Out before the gates opened with a helium balloon in one hand and a microphone in the other, telling Auckland just how cool it was going to be.
Kind of talk a bit of that with you.
Oh, absolutely. And that bloody-minded approach to, here's the brief, well, I know... instantly, instinctively, you know what the right answer will be, and then you know what the best answer would be, you know, and that's the one you want to write, and that's the one you really want to push out there. Occasionally, you'd have to do a straight one just to keep the tone, you know, or even to allow the really great ones to shine, you know. But you'd end up with ads for, remember Temple Bar on Queen Street, a little live music venue? And, man, again and again and again, you have to write ads for these same old places. And then once in a while, you'd actually just pull one out, which was one of my favourites, which was the Bogans downtown, talking about how one of them's got a new bomb-proof engine, so they test it out by throwing a bomb at it. It explodes. They can't go hooning around anymore, so what should they do? Go to Temple and listen to some,
oh, I see what you
some
did
acoustic
there. That's
band.
That's genius! God, but send actually, me to calm. Have a grape.
But the best bit about it was creating the ads and not sticking to 30 seconds, but also sitting in there with Elmer or with mm-hmm. Bill as producers and spending, you know, 4 to 5 hours creating explosion sounds, Vicks in the toilet for...
I've got that one for later on.
Yeah, and occasionally, I mean, it got so freaking hard just to perform on the spot every single time. Here's the latest brief for, you know, some shoes, and it's, oh man, I'm going to die. But you'd always find a way. And we had secret get-out-of-jail-free cards, like this month we will always use explosions, next month we will always use cats. Mm. And we had our favourite...
One week we always used the word spinnaker. I don't know why. I think it was something to do with the America's Cup pass.
And there was a period of time there, quite a long period actually, but where farts were de rigueur in most of the ads. In fact, I don't think farts ever went out of fashion with
farts,
the BFM
ads. Possibly the world's funniest joke. Possibly the world's first joke. Possibly caused the world's first laugh. But Elmer, who was...
by a fart.
Yeah, Elmer, who was the engineer in studio, used to basically leave a special mic set up, which was kind of a lower mic. And you could basically run into the studio at any time you wanted and say, Elmer, 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 mic two, mic two. And he'd just stop the ad, even if there's someone in there doing a voiceover. And you just, you know, you'd get a whole bunch of different fart sounds. And he actually had a fart bank, which was good because we'd just gone to Pro Tools, which meant you could store all this stuff digitally, right? Mm. So we had the fart bank. one of my proudest achievements is actually the fart button, which we used on Friday Night Ellen. And, of course, that was under the key F. So whenever you pushed that, there was a fart. I'm not sure whose fart that actually was. I think it might have been Bill's. I don't know. It was a very tonally quite rich. And he used to eat a lot of the wedges and sour cream from the calf downstairs. So that probably made it sound a little bit like that. So I think, you know, I still occasionally hear that fart on air, so it's very, very proud. If people go, what's the best thing you've ever done in your life? It's definitely the fart button.
It's a historical fart.
It's definitely. That fart's been farted a lot of times. Yeah. I think they actually had to replace the F key.
And we would get pretty drunk on a Friday night and then roll up and do the show.
What?
What? We, yes.
That explains it all. Yeah.
So that was a couple of years, I think, probably 97. I think I slowly sort of drifted out. Yeah. Of favour with the show. I just wasn't feeling the love. Partly because, you know, Bob and Scott were quite sort of close and quite cliquey, and occasionally they'd just turn my mic off and just carry on.
You know? You're that other guy in a threesome.
Yeah. One watching.
I'll go and brush my teeth.
No, actually, I think when we started the show, we, especially the Graveyards, we had an idea of what a radio show should look like. Right, and it should be sort of, there should be guests, there should be music, probably giveaways, funny sound effects, that sort of stuff. And so we just got a big box of mismatched sort of parts and some sellotape and lots of alcohol and put this show together. It ended up being the ugliest, most Frankenstein kind of screwed up piece of wonderful. And then we tried to make it worse after that, and we just pushed it and pushed it until we broke it. And that was the night that I decided I'd not had enough, but achieved everything I could on radio. Was the night we actually hit about probably 47, 48 seconds of dead air. And then Bob reached for the mic and just cracked one off.
Yep.
Live on air. And that's it. That's the pinnacle. That's the absolute zenith. There's nothing more I can do on
radio. My work is done.
My work is done.
But no. But no. We carried on. Soldiered through.
Soldiered on downwards, I can believe it.
Yeah,
you guys had so much more tenacity than I did.
It was
it's the weirdest puppy I've ever heard.
It was a threesome, come on. I was studying history at university through my own fault. Probably because no one wanted any archaeologists in New Zealand, I figured. Then I better concentrate on the history part. Anyway, I ended up staying to do the masters because I thought, shit, what do I do after a BA? Completing a BA in history.
Plus, you didn't want to pay rent anywhere.
No, that's right. Many friends who are historians. So anyway, I used to hang out here quite a bit, did a bit of news when I could be bothered. Then, much like Greg, was sort of watching Bob write some ads, and I went, oh, hang on, that's probably a bit more fun. Can I write some ads, please? And he went, okay, here you go. Here's a stack of briefs. And it was, oh, okay, cool, choice. So I got my first one and I did that. And it was a stupid ad about some guy going up to a bouncer, but his shoes had, every step had all these different sound effects to it. It was like, so that was the first one that got accepted. And so did all the other ones. So I just kept on doing that. And then even more lazily, at the end of your masters, you have to do, you could do a thesis or a dissertation. I chose the easier option. And I did a dissertation.
Pardon me.
That was a burp, not a fart. And I chose to do it on the history of BFM because I figured that would be quite easy. I could just sit around here all day and talk to people in shadows and write it down. And that's what happened pretty much. So I did that, and I was writing ads. After I finished the masters and just sort of basically just kept coming up here every day. I think I told my parents they were paying me. I wasn't getting paid. I think the govo was paying me. Still living at home.
So, I'm glad you brought that up because many people still consider you BFM's official historian.
God. It was an interesting one because I've always thought it would make a really good coffee table book. You know?
Well, it's funny you should say that.
Ah, really? Perfect.
Here's one I've prepared
earlier. Can we use what you wrote? Go for it. Factually, completely incorrect. And it was done just to pass a bloomin' paper. But no, it was very interesting doing that because you did get to learn about all where it came from and those guys. And I'm sure you'll touch on that. And I don't need to talk about that. But yeah, it was interesting. I think the main thing, and I'd say to any of the listeners out there, is if you've got any photos of the old days, that's the most important thing because That was the hardest thing for me to find. I had to go through old Crackhams and old Monitor magazines and snip out bits, actually snipped out bits from the library copies. So what you see there is actually the only copy. Sorry, Auckland University Library. Oh, shit. Can we turn this thing on? Is this, oh, it's on. Oh, you are recording. Okay. Just disguise that bit with a fart. Yeah. So what the funny thing also that happened around that time that I started writing ads is this whole youth market phenomenon.
Crap, I missed it.
I know. Sorry. This whole youth market thing took off. And then Auckland started getting a few more radio stations like Channel Z.
So
Channel Z 96.1. And everyone was tapping into this thing. And everyone wanted a piece of BFM. So there was more ads to write. So eventually they said, oh, okay, we'll just pay you. Thanks. And I went, sweet. So they paid me and I wrote some ads.
What?
Yeah, ha ha. Not very much, about a buck more than the dollar, but that was certainly fine by me.
Oh, so I'm out of here.
Okay, see you later. Come back, please. No, don't go. So yeah, that was a real fun period, because what you also got was a lot of people trying to run their own ads on the station. And I'll never forget things like Red Bull, you know, those cartoon ads they have on TV. Well, they had some radio ads that sounded the same, and they just didn't sound very good. And we went, no, look, sorry, no, because we had right of refusal, which is a very contentious issue back then. And why are you saying no? What do you mean? All these agencies would go, what are you doing here? You can't say no. So what actually happened, we had to put it down on paper so we could send it to them, something called the BFM Creative Policy.
Mm-hmm.
And now that is something which was a lot of misunderstanding about it. It was often thought by agency guys that you guys are wankers, you won't run our ads. But what it actually meant was, it's quite simple. If you've got a station that sounds like BFM, and the announcers sound like they do, then surely your ads would want to be sounding the same, rather than, g'day kids, come and buy the latest version of Windows, you know?
Only $14.95.
That kind of thing. And I do remember this meeting that me and Bob and Suzanne, the station manager at the time, had in Bates Palace, I think, where these guys sat us around the boardroom and played these ads for Windows or Microsoft Office or something for students, you know, and it was like this big palaver, big song and dance. Oh, we want you guys to run these ads, you know, we think they're quite down with the kids, so we've already made them. And it was like, oh, you shouldn't have probably done that, because I can just imagine how they're going to sound. And they did sound like how you'd imagine. They had that commercial voiceover guy, you know, and it's like, sorry, that doesn't fit in with the sound. We'd be happy to take your script and revoice it. And that was always the option, you know. We'd take their script and revoice it or rewrite it. So that sort of went out to the people who sell our advertising, and that was firmly understood, and it was on the contracts that they signed that, you know, it's not that we don't want to work with you. It's actually, this is how we do want to work with you. Quite simple. It certainly is a point of difference this station has. You know, if you listen to any other station, I don't care who it is, all of them, their ads all sound the same. There's a few exceptions, sure, but generally they do, and it's all a very homogenous mix of yelling and shouting, generally, you know. So if you can make your ad sound like your station, then I think you're doing something pretty basic, really. It's like, duh, hello.
That's what...
Shh. Over there, man. Look, it's a youth market.
After him. Get him, quick. Got him. Right. Oh, right, got him! Hold him down.
What do you want?
Shut up, you little bastard. Shut up. Right, now listen. What do you like? Simpsons or King of the Hill?
Answer me!
Simpsons!
Right, MTV or Max?
Max!
Come on! Come on!
I like them both!
Pearl Jam, are they still cool?
Pearl Jam! Are they still cool? What are the kids listening to? Tell us!
I don't know!
Gentlemen, sorry it's taken so long, but...
Yeah, it was hard, but I think we've got it nailed.
We've nailed what the youth market want, and they don't know what they want.
They don't know. We'll just make it up.
Let's make it up.
The Party Request Show on BFM, Saturday nights 9 till 12, thanks to Heaven Hill Bourbon. Phone 3073918 with your request. You tell us what you want.
That was the Youth Market ad, and I remember they sent out props to people, and we got hold of some of those props, the sales props, and it described who these stations were. So Bill, program director, just basically came up to me one day, and actually it was when Bob was on holiday in Italy, because he'd won the Grand Orca that year, which was a radio ad that the Orcas are this radio award thing that we were able to enter back then, and we just started cleaning up, really, just winning them all the time.
Because year after year, that's right.
And he won that, so he went away for a month, and I stepped in as creative director then, and Bill handed me these two props and said, write something about this. It's pretty funny, I reckon. So, yeah, I wrote that ad. It was just a direct commentary on what was happening at the time, and also ended up winning the Grand Orca the year after. And then they all got pissed off and stopped us from entering.
Did you win a trip to Italy, or did you win something else?
I won a trip to Egypt right after a bomb had gone off there, but we still went. It was awesome. See, they had things called, they had like monthly ones, so we won like, I think between us about 12 of them.
I remember them hanging up all over the wall.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Tons of them.
I've got to get my moment in the spotlight here. The one time I entered one of my ads, Bob forgot to tell me that he entered one of his. The one time. And he won the monthly, and I came second.
Oh, no. Yeah, it was funny. No, I think, so we won two of the grand ones, that's the yearly one, but then there was this thing by the whoever it was that said, no, we weren't allowed to enter anymore. BFM is not officially a network associated with something else. That was their excuse anyway. Well, we always started the show with the Pixies, because they are the greatest band in the world, you know. No, but, yep, we always start the show with the Pixies, and this is a personal favourite, Valoria, which used to love and still do. We'll be right back.
Right, now I'd like to introduce the topic of vas deferens.
Ah, yes, vas deferens.
Sorry! Sorry, Mum.
Sorry, McDonald's, sorry. Vaz was this newsreader who used to come up and read the news.
Stumble into the studio.
Get out of his Lexus and come up here. So we used to write stories for him to read out. And
he had come from a background of commercial radio.
He did come from a background of commercial radio.
In one of those provincial stations like Whakatane, yes, or somewhere like that.
Yes. You know. I hope he...
That's right.
I hope he gold, I think.
Yeah, it was. And he was a big star back in the 80s. I mean, you know, remember Top Marks and a few ladders, a few rungs down that ladder there was Vaz. And he had the voice for it. He's a very short person in stature. But so we used to write stories for him. You know, he was sort of coming up here trying to get down with the kids at the time. So he'd read anything out. And the whole thing was that we'd never show him what he read until the on-air button got pushed. And the whole trick was to try and make him crack up, and it happened quite a lot. You can actually hear him even today. He is the voice behind Neighbours at War and I think Motorway Patrol, and you might even hear him in those Mitre 10 ads as the voiceover for that. So I'm glad he's still working in the industry and he's still getting paid because, you know, bless him, at the time he was a mess.
It was actually, I mean, the training for that, it was... Came back from, even Graham Hill's days, when Graham was still around, we first started writing the joke news, you know, for Friday Drive, and we'd sneak a couple of stories in there, you know, Sky Tower's been built accidentally 10 metres to the left, and things like that, you know, and it was, but then Vaz turned up, and we just let him have it.
So that was, I think, Graham and Bob and you, Greg, started writing that, and then I jumped in, and then years down the track, Ben Hill from Freak the Sheep, he wrote possibly the funniest one, which was when BFM started advertising McDonald's years ago. People were up in arms. So he wrote this one, which, man, if their lawyers heard it, they'd be fucking dead. It was all about Mick this and Mick shit and Mick urine and Mick hot sweaty bums over Mick grills. And I was going to bring that one up, but to be quite frank, you would have got a phone call in the middle saying, cease and desist.
I think the great thing about Vaz deferens is that he never received a formal complaint from the Broadcasting Standards Authority.
No, not at all. As far as I know. That's the thing.
That's
like,
impossible.
You know, yeah, it's BFM. Hello. And it's tongue-in-cheek.
It wasn't tongue-in-cheek. It was tongue in all sorts of other places.
It was, yeah. And you know, something else that never got a complaint was the Broadcasting Standards Authority ad. Which, at the end of it, you know, la la la, if you'd like to complain, la 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 la, fuck knuckles, cock and piss.
Balls.
Oh, no one ever complained about that. This one is interesting because it was, I think this was possibly the first or second Iraq war. So we're going back a bit there. A few other things there, but it was, I know that we're listening now on Saturday morning, so it's not one of the worst ones, I think. I can't quite remember. Apologies in advance to... So Greg's mum who's listening.
BFM News Injection. Current affairs as they happen on the radio.
Good evening, ladies. I'm Vaz deferens. It's a bit wet, isn't it? We balls wobbled and then I fell down. That was the response from sex therapist Marnie Pantsdown after an unplanned rollercoaster orgasm. Multiple doesn't come close to describing it, mused the still-smiling Pantsdown. The delta-rattling experience came during a trial run of the latest product from famous sex toy manufacturer Clacker King. Pantsdown was test-driving a pair of Oriental love balls that contained a powerful electromagnet within each sphere. Pantsdown walked unknowingly under a high-voltage power line and things got a little out of hand. Pantsdown was seen cartwheeling down a suburban street, scaring animals and small children with blood-curdling screams of pure electro-pleasure. Pantsdown will retry the love balls again tomorrow without any modifications. Testing is expected to take longer than expected. Pantsdown is hoping for an electrical storm tomorrow morning. In further news, the release of a new pornographic film has caused outrage in the world of cereals, seeds, and breakfast companies. Titled Stirring the Porridge, the film tells... Beg your pardon, the film tells the story of a woman who has sex with a number of men who each leave their spoof inside. Each of the men who... Each of the men who follow the first turn the camera to the camera and deliver the line, I'm stirring your porridge, and those looking on say, I can't wait to stir your porridge. The manufacturers of porridge, roll notes and other similar products are launching a case action against the porn merchants who have sullied the product. Their spokesman... Their spokesman, Mr. Healthy Bowels, commented today that porridge should not be stirred with a male member, but a wooden spoon. And finally today in breaking news, Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi nation have moved countries from their present location, Iraq, to the eastern seaboard of Canada. Saddam said at a press conference today that he was looking forward to not worrying about the price of oil or the Americans trying to bomb him and steal his oil. In an unrelated comment, he also said he was keen on meeting Monica Lewinsky and did not think she looked like a swamp donkey. And finally, boom, yes, that's right, folks. There's another war on. Just look at your television. The only question on everybody's lips and assholes, though, is what to call it? Suggestions just... Beg your pardon, suggestions. Justin from Australia, ad agency, testicle cock and piddle holder, desert breeze, let's bag dad. Saddam takes Manhattan and desert storm 2, flying killers. Part-time CNN war reporter Fade Porter reported... Reported earlier the sound of a few thuds which could be heard from their Baghdad hotel. Hotel fanatical insanity. There were a few thuds at first, reported the bomb-buggered broadcaster. Then a boom, three kablabs and a douche. Which was shortly followed by five klubs, a blast and a whoosh. Excuse me. And fresh on the trail of the tales of Iraqi shambles comes the new PlayStation game tentatively titled Kidder Desert Raccoon 4, in which a raccoon rides a hotted up Asian waitress called Sweet and Sour Clitty Clitty Bang Bang and shoots a homosexual Kadapo war leader called Saddam Hussein. I'm Vass Deference, I beg your pardon.
I think that was the one, I remember why I chose it now, because that was the one he cracked up possibly one of the most... If you've seen a man like him laugh, you know, he's not a tall man, but there's a body that shakes and just wobbles around, and, you know. But
he often stayed on through, you know, because so we had Friday Drive and then Andrew Blackwood would come on in and the black hole, you know, fire out. Nothing ever came out of that. Except Andrew Blackwood occasionally emerged in a sort of cloud of theatrical smoke. Which actually got us in a crap load of nearly... Well, actually, I mean, the one time that I brought guests up to the studio was my brother and sister-in-law when they were, I think, 13 and 15. I popped them up to say, you know, this is what radio is all about. And this was in the temporary studio across the hallway while things were getting done up. And there was only one door. There wasn't the kind of airlock that we've got here. And Andy Black was on, and I opened the door, and this theatrical smoke... Like that's something like Lord of the Rings. And there was a security guard standing behind me. So I'm there with a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old and the security guard. And boy, the shit nearly went down that night. But yeah, so I think that because you know, occasionally things would happen with Andy. I mean, there was that one time that I wasn't here and I think Bob and Scott turned up and they ended up not here as well through something that had happened with Andy. And
I remember coming to outside a squid at about 5.
Yeah. And I think Vaz was involved in that, and we actually never saw him again for years. Yeah.
I think he got given a chainsaw by BFM when he left.
As a parting
thing. As a parting thing, yeah. I think that's right, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm, well, that sounds better than a clock.
It was a nice clock.
Perfect. We always played the Pixies and we always played the Dandy Warhols. Back then they only had one album. And but they were sort of, we sort of picked them out quite early on when they first came out, and I still love Dandy Warhols and still do. And God, that was a good concert they did at the Power Station many moons ago. And this one is called the Dandy Warhols TV theme song, because I like TV theme songs.
Of course, it wasn't always smooth sailing on the Friday night, Alan, and from time to time, you guys would get in trouble.
Yes, there was certainly a few times. There was one time in particular where mystery celebrity, who was used to come up, who had a bit of a deep voice as well, not dissimilar from Vaz Deverance, but a girl rang up and he started talking into the microphone and she told him that she was sitting on a speaker and that the speaker was vibrating. And he started doing low hums through the microphone over the air, and she started getting a little bit more excited. And this sort of went back and forth for a while and culminated in a little bit more excitement, shall we say. Obviously, it's in the morning, so I can't get too explicit. However, that was possibly one time someone was listening to the show, and there was a little complaint made to the station manager, who thought it would be a good idea to pull the show off air for a month, just as a precautionary thing, because it was quite dirty, actually, I have to say. And that mystery celebrity sure was a naughty boy. yeah. And so a few weeks after that, we decided that we would actually end the show. We're gonna end the show now. It's run its course. So we did the last show ever, had a few special guests up, and it was a really lovely show. So we ended that. And then that show, then... We didn't actually end the show because the next couple of weeks we put on this promo saying that Friday Night Ellen would be replaced by an acid jazz show. So we made up this promo, this acid jazz, jazz and jazz, you know, something really gay like that. Here's another one. It sounds a little bit like this. So we came on, we played that for a couple of weeks, and then we just started Friday Night Ellen again, and all these people were listening and hanging out for this acid jazz show. And we fielded quite a lot of grumpy calls, but as usual, we recorded it and swiftly made it into a promo for next week's show. And here's that promo now. Those very angry people. Suckers.
Stop playing the Hawaiian music and maybe not interrupt so many songs. I never listen on Friday night.
What in with the acid jazz show?
Give the acid jazz guys a chance. You guys ahead of your time, you has been.
Most people here would rather listen to CDs. People don't want to hear this on a Friday night.
What happened to the acid jazz show, man? It's probably better than listening to you guys prattle on week after week. What, nothing else to listen to?
Where's that acid jazz?
I really hate you guys, because I told all my friends to listen to the acid jazz show and you two wankers are on, and you make up for 10 bloody honey hickey there. That useless joker in the background.
Thank you very much, Pepsi, the choice of a new generation.
There's a very, very funny story about that. I forgot that we were sponsored by Pepsi for a while, like for about 6 months, and they let us make our own promos. And they clearly never listened because we had these promos that went, Pepsi, lick my balls. Pepsi gives me the shits. And that was what we did, and they gave us some Pepsi to give away. So I think that was a little bit of the youth market trying to get on board with the youth.
You know, just we also had another sponsor back in the day. I think we might have only ever had two, which is probably two more than we needed. But 1BD.
What?
1BD.
What is that?
1BD. That's the Korean go juice stuff in the small bottle. They sponsored us for about probably 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah,
they
that was a, through a friend John.
Through a friend of ours called John. And John Lee. And in return, we got him a root.
Yeah, that's right. No, we said, I think we did a shout out on air. I mean, a call out on air that said, John's just broken up with his girlfriend. If anyone would like to come up and give him a kiss, that would be good. And someone did. And they went home together. Perfect. It's nice to be able to arrange things like that.
Some of the people that were never the sponsors of a Friday Night Ellen was the New Zealand Poultry Board. However,
no, I don't think they were.
Nor Teagle Chicken.
No, that's right. No, no, no. I don't know why chicken, but no, I do know why chicken. Do you like chicken? There's an answer to that joke, and probably because it's the morning again, I won't say that, but that's, you know, that's a joke. It's not very funny at all. We used to ring all these chicken shops up and ask them if they like chicken. It seems so stupid when talking about it now. Because that was funny. Trust me, it was funny, listeners. And then by chance we found this place called Chicken and Things. And you're going, Chicken and Things? What other things? Wrapping? Giblets? You know, wouldn't you, if you had a shop called Chicken and Things, you'd probably want to say what those things were. It was a lovely lady there, so we gave her a little hard time. If she's listening, sorry about that, love. Play the track. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Teagle Foods. Sarah speaking.
Hello, do you like chicken?
Yeah.
Hello, are you speaking?
Yes. Do you like chicken?
Do I like chicken?
Yeah.
Why? KFC Pond for me.
Hello, do you like chicken?
Sorry?
Do you like chicken?
Chicken?
Yes.
Do you want chicken?
Do you like chicken?
Do I like chicken?
Yes.
Yeah. Why?
Yes, do you like chicken?
Sorry?
Do you like chicken?
Yes.
Hello, do you like chicken?
Excuse me?
Do you like chicken?
There's a chicken shop.
Yes. Do you like it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good
afternoon, Venom Ring Crew.
Oh, sorry, wrong number.
Okay, then.
Okay, bye.
Thanks. Hello, Burger King. Can I help you?
Yes, do you like chicken?
Yep.
Good afternoon.
Sorry? Sorry, who? What? Who am I talking to? Do you like chicken?
Good afternoon, chicken firm.
Yeah, do you like chicken?
Maybe, do you?
Good afternoon, chicken thing.
Do you like chicken?
Is this fun? Is this a game?
Yes.
Well, ring somebody else. I'm not in the mood for a game, okay?
Don't you like chicken?
Huh? You rang me before and asked me, what did I say?
You said that you didn't like chicken, did you?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Hello?
Pitcher Products, Greg Phillips speaking.
Yeah, hi Greg. Do you like chicken?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Okay.
Welcome to Ringham's North again.
Hello, do you sell chicken?
We do.
Do you like chicken?
Sometimes.
Yeah, hi, do you like chicken?
What chicken?
Do you like chicken?
Yes, I do.
So that, yeah. Do you like chicken?
1 second.
Is this a game? Is this fun? Wait, the music in the background of that, you liked that music though, didn't you?
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. We used to use that music as our quote-unquote hold music. And what had happened was in the agency that I'd set up, we used to get people to do actual voices for actual TV ads and that sort of thing. And one of those voices was the telecom voice, Michael Kiyomorrissey, and what a lovely man. And we somehow persuaded him to come up and have a couple of wines and do some voicing for us. And he's the guy who's, you know... thank you for calling. Please hold the line. That sort of stuff. You know, you'll know his voice. And we got him. He was fully into it. And he did one for us that was, you know, thank you for calling. Please line the hold. Oh, shit. And he also did this fantastic one that we used for ages, which was the Friday night Alan is unavailable. And then we'd throw that music on. And what we'd do is we'd just hold callers on the air, play that sting for them, drop the music in and just walk away. And they'd be calling from parties, you know, ready to ring up and say, Moy, or something stupid like that kid used to do all the time.
Moy. Yeah, Moy boy.
Moy boy, or the crew from Glenbrook, or the Waiheke woman, or Adele.
Kelly and Adele. Two young girls used to call up quite a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting, our current program director, her name's Adele.
Could it be the same one?
Good Lord.
Who knows?
But yeah, we'd leave them for up to 10, 15 minutes at a time, just go for a walk.
Yeah, it's like they'd just do their own show. It was Oh, you're on the radio! Come and talk on the radio! Hello?
I think they're going, hello?
And then they just shut up. And get bored of it. And go, oh.
Can you give me another beer?
Music for dining. And what perfect music to dine to.
Greg and Scott, I'd like to say thanks for coming along and doing your bit on Historical Society.
Pleasure.
Especially absolute as pleasure. The official BFM historian. Oh. It is a great honour having you here.
Snort. Can I get a clock?
You're a masters of history.
Masters of history. You I will tell you what you want about facts. Historical facts.
Can you have a clock?
Yeah, can I have a clock?
Did they not you give like you a chicken? Clock when you left BFM?
Oh, yeah. We got poached by an ad agency. So
that's it. You went
that's how that happened.
Write ads for TV and other radio and got paid things. A lot more money and didn't get to use the fart button anymore.
Oh, no, we did for something for PlayStation.
A little bit.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the poo noises too.
Oh,
we never got to that.
The poo noises. You know.
Well, one of the joys of making ads here is that you did get a bit of time to spend crafting them. And making them as good as you want. Oh, you would have heard in that youth market one, lots of sound effects, making it rich, you know, heaps of Foley, theatre of the mind kind of stuff. You can just see what's going on. You can imagine everything. And with this one here, it was Cheapskates had a sale for their snow stuff, and it was called the 3-day dump. So what this ad, you know,
tricky brief, this one.
It's a tricky brief. Yeah. I think Josh had to go and sell this. But this involves the use of Weet-Bix And even though it's radio, you still put a bit of coffee in to make it look brown. And that's all I'm going to say. I had a microphone quite close up and a lot of grunting. But yeah, this was a certainly a fave. It was fun to make, shall we say.
It's the 3-day dump, cheapskates, Kaiba Bath, Takabuna in South Auckland.
This Friday, Saturday and Sunday, absolutely everything in store will be on sale. Don't be f***ing stupid, just get down there or you'll f***ing will f***ing just f***ing miss out and you'll f***ing regret it.
Cheapskate, 3-day dump.
The station sounds different than other stations, and that's the only thing that's different, you know? I think the reason why it survived is because it's done what it's always done. And the reason, and the way they can survive is keep doing what they've always done. As soon as you start playing music that all the other stations are playing, then you sound like them. Very simple. Make yourself different and keep yourself different. Not in a wacky goth kind of emo way, but, you know, just different. It's just different. That's all I can say. And that's Greg's nodding his head. Yeah.
And of course, it's a visual medium.
and of course, the creative policy. You know,
well, it's unbelievably important to keep that going. And, you know, and it's about having fun, really. It's just make it fun.
The creative policy. I mean, I can still remember the first ad that I fell in love with back in 83 or something like that for 256 records and cassettes in Queen Street.
I remember that.
It was the one about the 255, 255, 255, and he drives the guy nuts, so he jumps off the bridge and he says, 256. That's my kind of ad.
Perfect.
You have been listening to the BFM Historical Society, a weekly documentary series made to commemorate BFM's 40th anniversary. The Historical Society is broadcast every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and is available as a podcast from BFM's website later on in the week. The BFM Historical Society is recorded at BFM by Dubhead.